This is not going to be a pleasant experience. You're going to see and hear things that are not going to be very nice.
Experts divide serial killing into two general types, organized and disorganized. An organized killer brings everything he needs to complete the murder. A disorganized killer improvises.
Begin. Listener discretion is advised.
The first case begins in the mid-1980s when a man named Scott Colville met a woman named Jane Lim. They were both attending college in Riverside, California. Scott was studying biology while Jane was studying physical therapy. Scott ended up dropping out and moving to Sitka, Alaska. Jane finished her degree and moved to Sitka to be with him. They were officially married in October 1987 at the courthouse in Sitka. This was followed by a wedding in a church in San Diego in February 1988. Scott and Jane lived in a trailer on the edge of Sitka. Scott told his mother, Retta, that the relationship with Jane was tumultuous. They fought often. Jane also told Retta that the marriage was rough. She thought the marriage would be easier and there wouldn't be so many problems. April 12, 1988 was Scott's 26th birthday. His mother called him, but there was no answer. His mother also sent a birthday card with a check. The check was never cashed. Over a month later, his mother received a Mother's Day card. It was in Jane's handwriting, and it was signed, "Love, Jane and Scott." What was odd was that the postmark was in San Bernardino, California. 2 weeks after getting the card, Retta called Scott's phone number and discovered it had been disconnected and it was out of service. Scott's family became more and more concerned after they didn't hear from him. What they thought was odd was that if Scott had vanished, why had Jane not contacted them? Retta was the person who reported him missing. The official date of his disappearance is April 12, 1988, his 26th birthday. But at that point, Scott had been out of communication with his family for weeks. His family also noted that Jane had not reported him missing. It's unclear what the police did to investigate the disappearance. One major problem is that Sitka has a sizable transient population. A lot of people work there seasonally and they leave the area without telling anyone. Also, on average, 2,000 people go missing every year in Alaska. So Scott Colville's disappearance was just one of thousands. An officer did go over to the couple's trailer and it appeared that no one was living there. One suspicious thing was that Scott's truck was found parked at the airport. There are no roads in or out of Sitka, but if Scott were leaving town, why wouldn't he have sold his truck first? Also, there are no records of him buying a plane ticket. But Scott was a free spirit, so his family held out hope that he may have chosen to go somewhere and simply fell off contact. Retta kept thinking that any day her son might call her.
Here is a quick word from our sponsor.
We take this few seconds off to inform you, our valued loyal listener, about the best health and fitness podcast shows from the Nespod Studios. Join us as we give you the best of the best health and wellness updates you can rely on for the treatment of chronic health problems. Classic functional medicine back to basics health tips and special updates from the best doctors in the United States of America. Check out this health and wellness podcast shows. Explore Health Talk Weekly, Healthy Lifestyle Matters, Excellent Health Digest, Healthy and Free Daily, and last but not least, Weekly Health and Fitness Corner. Also, check out Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told fiction podcast, for that real life on the go experience with the 27-year-old golden boy, who made our guest invite number one list. He tells us about his story as it happens in real time and in real life. It's Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told. Go get a load of that happiness, because happiness is healthy as we know it. Join us every week as we continue to provide you the best of health and fitness wellness updates from around the globe. Enjoy the show.
In the summer of 1988, Scott's mother received a letter from Jane. It was 2.5 pages long. Jane wrote that she had come home one day and Scott's truck wasn't there. He had gone missing and she didn't know what happened to him. She wrote that he had probably lost his mind. Sadly, a year went by and Retta realized that her son probably hadn't chosen to disappear. After 4 or 5 years, Retta concluded that Scott was probably dead. In 1994, 5 years after he disappeared, she and Scott's father had him declared dead. Retta said that after about a decade, she stopped crying. After Scott disappeared, Jane lived in Southern California and worked as a physical therapist for several years. She also became heavily involved with the Seventh-day Adventists. She donated a lot of her time and money to the church. In 1998, Jane started dating a man named Christopher Reth, a corporate jet pilot. They were married in 2000 and they settled in Oswego, Illinois. But the marriage did not last long. After 5 years, the couple got divorced. On May 22, 2007, the Sitka police got an unusual phone call. It was from an investigator with the Catholic Church. 2 years earlier, Christopher and Jane got divorced. But Christopher wanted to get married again in the Catholic Church. So he was looking to get his marriage from Jane annulled. For annulments, investigators are assigned to review the marriage. Christopher told the investigator something shocking. Shortly after they got married, Jane confessed to killing her first husband, Scott Covell. The police in Sitka then contacted Christopher. He confirmed that Jane told him that she had killed Scott. The police asked Christopher for his assistance, and he agreed. Christopher called Jane, and while the police were listening and recording, they discussed the murder. Although Jane had confessed to the murder, the police weren't sure if they had enough evidence to charge her with anything. After all, there was no physical evidence that Christopher was even dead. So the police started looking for physical evidence. But after 2 years of investigating, they couldn't find anything. The police decided to confront Jane with the audio recording of her confessing to the murder of her ex-husband. She eventually confessed to the detective. This is a recording of the actual interview.
I've been feeling extremely, extremely lonely. And, he went out more and more. I was just scared that he didn't like me anymore.
Where did you shoot him at? What did you use?
Yes.
You had to swing the axe over your head and come down, right? And that left a lot of blood in the bedroom, you know, what we call cast off blood, on the walls, on the ceiling and stuff. How did you get all that off?
Jane claimed that their marital problems stemmed from the fact that Scott smoked marijuana. But then, later in the interview, she changed her story. She said she was hurt because Scott wanted to end the marriage. Jane said that while Scott laid in bed, she got a .357 Magnum and shot him in the jaw and neck area. She then used a long-handled axe to dismember the body. She put his body parts in garbage bags. She then put the bags with the body parts and the mattress out with the garbage. It's believed that the body parts of the mattress were picked up by waste collectors and then they were incinerated, which is how solid waste in Sitka was handled. The police then went to the trailer where Jane and Scott lived. In the master bedroom, they pulled up the carpet. They found a large stain on the subfloor that turned out to be blood. Scott Coville had his wisdom teeth pulled, and his mother still had the teeth. The police used the wisdom teeth to get a sample of his DNA. It was compared to the DNA in the blood stain. Experts determined that was Scott's blood on the subfloor. This confirmed Jane's confession. Jane Reth was arrested in January 2010, 22 years after the murder. She was extradited to Alaska. Initially, Jane planned on pleading not guilty. There was a lot of evidence against her, like her own confession, but the district attorney was still worried. The state of Alaska had never tried a case without a body or a murder weapon. So they didn't feel like they had a slam dunk case because if one jury member doubted that Scott was dead, then the trial could end in a hung jury. Jane eventually agreed to a plea deal. In November 2010, 46-year-old Jane Reth pleaded guilty to second-degree murder. Her defense lawyer wanted her to receive 5 years, while the prosecutor wanted her to be sentenced to 70 years. Jane explained that in the years since the murder, she had been a good person and she had been charitable with her time and money. The judge did agree that Jane did good things with her life in the years after the murder. But Jane's actions did not give Scott a chance to do anything with his life, and she should be punished for that. In March 2011, Jane was sentenced to 36 years of prison. With good behavior, she could just serve 24 years. That means she could be released as early as 2034, when she'll be 70 years old. Alaska does not have a public inmate database, so it's not known where Jane is serving her sentence. At the time of this recording, Jane Reth is just a few weeks shy of her 57th birthday. Our second case starts in the summer of 1991. Catherine Dolan Heckel was 40 years old. She had been married for 18 years, and she and her husband had 2 children. They lived in Lock Haven, which is a city in north central Pennsylvania. In the early 90s, Lock Haven had a population of just over 9,000 people. For almost half of her life, Heckel worked at the International Paper Company, which was a paper mill. In mid-1991, she was a management secretary. Heckel's husband was in the National Guard. In mid-July 1991, he was away on a training exercise. Around 9 a.m. on July 15th, Heckel called her children from work. She told them that she planned on using her lunch break to run a few errands, and then she would eat lunch by herself. During the lunch break, Heckel was seen driving her silver 1990 Ford Fiesta out of the company's parking lot, but she never returned to the mill, nor did she go home. The next day, her father reported her missing. 3 days after Heckel went missing, her car was found in the parking lot of a local hospital. But there were no clues inside of it as to what happened to 40-year-old Catherine Dolan Heckel. Heckel wasn't carrying much money or anything worth stealing, so the police didn't think that her disappearance was the result of a robbery gone wrong. If someone is in a romantic relationship and they are murdered or go missing, the first suspect is their partner. But Heckel's husband was quickly eliminated as a suspect because he wasn't in town when she disappeared. The police also didn't find any evidence of him paying someone to do something to his wife. Then the police learned that Heckel had not been faithful to her husband. A friend told the police that Heckel had been having an affair with 41-year-old Lloyd Groves. Groves was a chemist at the paper mill where Heckel worked. Like Heckel, Groves was married and he had children. According to the friend, Heckel wanted to end the affair, but Groves did not. On the morning that Heckel disappeared, people at the paper mill noticed some unusual things. For example, someone heard Heckel and Groves having a loud argument. Then Groves was seen chasing Heckel through the paper mill. People also saw Groves driving out of the parking lot shortly after Heckel drove out of the lot. Groves returned to work a few hours after the lunch break ended that afternoon. The police decided it was best to interview Lloyd Groves. Groves told the police that he and Heckel had not been romantically involved. He also denied knowing anything about her disappearance. The police looked in Groves' work desk and they found a .25 caliber handgun. They searched his van and found some more incriminating things. They found two gym bags, a partially used roll of duct tape, .25 caliber bullets, a hunting knife, and a seat cushion that had a stain on it. Also, a piece of carpet had been cut out of the van. Groves said that his children had been playing with tar and oil and they stained the carpet. Finally, several specks of blood were found inside the van. Groves lived on a 65-acre property with his wife and children. The property was searched and nothing was found. The searches made Groves nervous and people noticed that he was anxious. He was worried about getting arrested and told several people that he might be arrested. The police later found a letter that Groves had written to his wife. Groves wrote that he was going to be arrested for Heckel's murder. It gave instructions on what to do regarding things around their home. But the police could find nothing that definitively linked Groves to Heckel's disappearance. Had they found her body, then it might have been easier to connect him to the murderer. But since they couldn't find her remains, Groves was not arrested. Shortly after Heckel went missing, Groves moved away from Lockhaven. He and his family eventually ended up in Portage County, Ohio. For a long time, the case sat cold. 7 years to the day that she disappeared, July 15, 1998, Catherine Dolan Heckel's family had her declared dead. Unfortunately, many years went by and still no progress was made on the case. After moving to Portage County, Lloyd Groves got a job with the health department and he continued to work there. He eventually became the director of environmental health. At the end of 2014, he retired from the health department. that on January 29th, 2015, the police did something shocking. Although Catherine Dolan Heckel's remains had not been found, Lloyd Groves was arrested and charged with her murder. DNA tests had been performed on the blood flags found in Groves' van. It was the blood of Catherine Dolan Heckel. Lloyd Groves went to trial for first-degree murder nearly 4 years after he was arrested in November 2018. It had been over 27 years since Heckel disappeared. The prosecution argued that Heckel wanted to end the affair that she was having with Groves, and this enraged him. They met up after they left the paper mill. Groves most likely shot Heckel to death and then put her body into his van. He then somehow disposed of her body. The defense pointed out that Heckel had cut her finger around the time she disappeared. She had gone to the hospital 3 different times to have it mended, so her blood could have gotten into his van that way. The defense also said that there was no evidence that Heckel was dead. Perhaps she just ran away. The defense introduced bank records from Heckel's husband into evidence. Heckel's husband thought that before his wife disappeared, she may have been taking money and hiding it. The defense also said that Groves did return to the mill late that day, but that was because he had a dirty shirt and he went home to change it. After a 2-week trial, the jury deliberated for over 2 days. 69-year-old Lloyd Groves was acquitted of first-degree murder, but he was found guilty of third-degree murder. Third-degree murder is a murder committed in the spur of the moment. He was sentenced to 10 to 20 years of prison, which was the maximum sentence. Lloyd Groves maintains his innocence. Since he claims he is innocent, he has not revealed what happened to Catherine Dolan Heckel's remains. Her remains have never been located. 71-year-old Lloyd Groves is serving his sentence at the State Correctional Institution, Huntingdon, in Pennsylvania.
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you. This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.